his foreground and his ancestry and his potential descendants is part of a compound religious picture. In simple words, we can say that there is in every church individuals whose consciousness belongs to almost all of the religions of the world. The gentleman in the front row pew is very Orthodox Church of England, but his thinking is Hindu. He doesn't know it. Instinctively he responds, and whether he knows it or not, through him, his own teachings take on this coloring. A quiet-faced elderly lady in the back of the congregation has been very faithful, has gone to church every Sunday in her lifetime, and has a perfect record, and she is, without knowing it, a devout Buddhist. She doesn't know it. It is the inside coming out and giving her that which she needs. If you named it and analyzed it, you would have to classify it with the Buddhist faith. But when you don't do that, she doesn't have to classify it. To her, it is perfectly good Church of England. Because that's what she believes. Many years ago, I addressed a ministerial conference here in Los Angeles and was asked to discuss a subject. I took two verses from the Bhagavad Gita and I discussed the subjects, quoted the verses, but did not give the source. After the meeting was over, a retired Methodist was so glad that I was a Methodist. A Baptist was sure I was a Baptist. An Anglican knew I had to belong to Church of England. And these men of different groups all agreed that what I had said was uniquely theirs. And this is what it is all over the world. Just let us face these things. The barriers of sectarianism are artificial. But when something strikes the heart or the soul, the acceptance arises, but it is interpreted in terms of the familiar. We take it on in terms of what we already accept as correct and proper. Now, in the last 25 years particularly, many of these ideas that people have, which are not really local or not really orthodox to the average person's thinking of orthodoxy, these ideas have caused members of many foreign faiths to come to this country. We now have all kinds of Oriental teachings here. We have teachings that have been restored from the remote past. We have the disciplines and ideas that go directly to Egypt or go to China or Persia. We have all kinds of ancient beliefs that have been restored. Somebody somewhere along the line read a book on it, or read one of the recently discovered Gnostic library manuscripts, and suddenly realized that what was in there was true. So he started a little group to study the problem, and soon he had his own little following. All of these different groups, with their Zen and their Tibetan and their Brahmanic and their classical interests and activities, are all people flowing into the recognition of what they already believe. This isn't something new coming to them. It is simply the fact in all their lives this has been their point of view, but they never knew what to call it. They never knew why they believed that way. And then suddenly a group starts here with the same teaching and they discover that they have come home. Now this does not mean that these types of allegiances represent the breaking up of religions. nor are they constantly endangering Orthodox structures. They are simply a little symbol of the fact that inside of us, each of us belongs to all religions. We are all of one faith, and that faith is humanity. It is the religion which we have put into 150 languages or more. We have distributed it throughout the world. We are now reprinting and re-editing the religious creeds of practically every nation. And they are all part of the simple fact that the God in man is the father of all faiths. We have to feel this and realize it. So these faiths may have division within them, but the truth is never divided. It is emphasized, it is experienced, it is discovered. The individual who has for many years longed to go to some quiet and peaceful place and rest for a while suddenly discovers the ashram, something he didn't know there was before. Also, others feeling the same type of impulse make a retreat. They do a novena, or they do something. But whether they are meditating on the heights of the Himalayas or in a retreat somewhere in Southern California, they are fulfilling the same spiritual need, a need that has grown within themselves. Consequently, there will be people, probably, who will never know exactly where their faiths come from. They will never know why the heart in them wants a certain thing, why it tips naturally and suddenly says, I have found what I'm looking for. If this happens, then it is a very good sign, as long as the mind has the power to censor the quality of the belief. Man believes on different levels. Some people believe only in that which will fulfill their personal desires. Some want to believe a faith that promises wealth. Others want a faith that promises freedom from responsibility. Still others, perhaps, want a faith that will heal their illnesses. Each individual has some interest in a certain form of belief, because that it will cater to himself. He has to be watchful of this, however. A faith that caters to him and isn't suitable to him may not cater to someone else and will be suitable for them. It depends entirely upon the emerging need of the person. And it is to meet this emerging need that he has to consider his religious allegiances. Now, if you're looking for a religion, the first thing you really have to do is to decide in yourself what kind of a person you are. What are your dominant interests in life? If your dominant interest in life is to be happy, this is not a good foundation for a profound mystical experience. If you wish most of all to get over some kind of an ailment, then you will naturally be interested in groups that perform healing activities. To you, then, your religion is a seeking after the restoration of health, and this in turn may be nobly impelled. It may be that you want to be better so that you can fulfill your responsibilities more adequately. If your reason for health is that you want to live to learn more and be a better person, it is perfectly justifiable. But you have to study out what is the motive behind your desire to find a religion. Probably the most common motive that we have is the realization of personal inadequacy. There must be always so much unfinished business in our living. We must find answers to things that are not pleasant or particularly fortunate to our present condition. But we are all looking for release from something. We are looking for attainment of something. We're looking for fulfillment of something. We are all looking for answers, but only for answers to the questions that we ask. So the questions you ask have much to do in clearing the mystery of the level of your own existence. Also, I think it is a mistake to think that great virtues are more worthy than little virtues. Actually, a person of very limited intelligence or limited knowledge can, by personal conduct, excel a person who is much better informed and has a much higher standard of living, but does not have the internal insight. So fulfillment of the soul need is largely in hope, faith, and service to others. The primary motive of the individual, primarily, is to release into manifestation the divinity within him, and then become the faithful servant of that divinity. It is the right of the individual to follow the soul and not to try and lead it. The soul is the one thing in man that is dependable if he does not pollute its energies. Now, when we are studying this problem, we must realize that the heart, as the seat of the soul, according to the mystics, has no actual appetites of the body. The heart is not concerned with social graces, primarily. It is not bound to affluence. It is not competitive. It is not aspiring in career and fortune hunting. The heart is seeking to release the divine will into action. It is not our will, but the will of the Father that must be done. And in the presence of the soul, the mind, the emotions, and the body must humble themselves because they are standing before the altar of their own God. This being the inevitable truth of the matter, the person must try to understand the degree of release of which his soul is capable because of the confusion of his material and personal life. If he wishes to make one step, and make it a serious step, it is better than all the affirmations that the human mind can think of. The individual starts the release of soul by releasing his life of something that impairs soul. He gains it by freeing the mind from its own conscience qualms, feeding the ideals of character, and doing a little better in the job, whatever it may be. Instead of thinking that baptism is by immersal or sprinkling or something of this kind, let us say that the man who is a carpenter suddenly feels the impulse of religion. He is pleased particularly, perhaps because he realizes that Joseph was a carpenter and that Jesus labored with him in his carpentry shop. The carpenter, therefore, has something to be very proud of, in a sense, in a gentle way, not competitive. He knows perfectly well there were no unions in those days. But this, in order to accomplish what might be termed a new life, a reborn life, as the churches may refer to it, this carpenter, with this realization, must resolve within his own consciousness that from that moment on, he will do the best work that he can. He will never deceive a customer. He will never use poorer materials. He will never lounge on the job. He will never do that which is not fair and square to the client and to himself. So he becomes an honest carpenter. Now he can join any religion in the world and be a carpenter, but only his own inner life can make him an honest one. And the only one that is anointed of the Lord is the one who is honest. So we take each of the departments of life, and we say that the development of our religion is through a series of personal experiences by which we consecrate what we are to that which forever is and beyond our comprehension. We can say that the individual who has feuds in his family, who neglects his children, or who allows pleasures to interfere with the proper responsibilities of life, that this individual gets religion. He gets it only if it changes him, if it makes him view these things which are his natural responsibilities. No matter of affirmation, attendance, confession, or contrition can solve his problem unless he improves his own conduct. So religion is a gradually ascending ladder of conduct, lifting the individual from the commonplace, the thoughtless, and the selfish to the fulfillment of the highest resources with which he has been endowed. It does not follow that the carpenter can in a few months or a few years attain to some high philosophical or spiritual level. He doesn't have to, because everything is the release from within himself. And as he releases, he ascends, whether anyone knows it or not. And he is in favor with those powers of life which finally decide all things. So if you're looking for a religion that's going to help you at the moment, you might look at some defect in character that needs attention. You can say to yourself, I am a bit of a gossip, and I know I shouldn't be, but I still do it. Well, the soul is not a gossip. The man is not created to be a gossip. We are told in the Bible that he's supposed to spread glad tidings. Well, if that is the case, there are some very delinquent sinners somewhere in the world. No, we don't have to gossip. This is our first sacrifice. If we recover from this habit, we have a new birth of virtue in ourselves. And that is a good start. Another individual says, I am vain. I'm loaded with vanity. I think too much of my own outside appearance and nothing about my inner life. Another one will say, I am selfish. I want too many things. I waste money. I go in debt. I do all kinds of things. Take one of these and start to work on it and find out what conscience, character, and the inner life within you would like for you to do about it. You know what your mind is going to say. That is, keep on doing it because I'm having fun doing it. But this is not a conversion, nor is the individual who makes $1 million suddenly religious because he builds into the church a new stained glass window. That's supposed to wipe away a lot of sins. But there's something strange about a window that is put in by a person who in one way or another was dishonest in his business transactions, or at least failed to live up to the religious standard of the sect to which he belongs. Start in, then, with some simple thing that needs cleaning, needs brushing up, needs changing, and begin by finding the natural religious pattern that is practical and useful. For the majority of human beings, churches are more or less standard structures. of churches, the most valuable that I have ever contacted and have ever experienced are the churches in small towns. There is no great pretense in them. There is no great pretense in the followers. They have not a vast building program that's going to cost $100 million. They are not constantly raising funds for their own salaries. These little town preachers and their families and the congregations that go to them are going for consolation. They are going for a moment of quietude to refresh the spirit. And they are simple people with simple needs. There's no reason to try to teach them some abstract philosophy or some great oriental truth. The thing they need is the courage to live day by day and keep the principles of a good life. They need the strength to take care of their older people, the strength to discipline the young, the strength to work without hope of reward, and most of all, the strength to give everything they have because of love, devotion, and integrity. Here we have the beginning of religion. And religion of this kind, in one way or another, is found in practically all parts of the world. Even among the most primitive people, there is this dedication to common need. There is this recognition of responsibility, and also a strange, subtle gratitude from the realization that there is a divine plan which is carrying on regardless of us. So the problem is to find something simple. Do not find things that stir up a tremendous amount of fervor. Do not join elegant churches because of their elegant congregations. Find the thing in which your own heart finds satisfaction, that you can sit quietly for a few hours a week somewhere in a sanctuary where you can be at peace with yourself, peace with God, and peace with the world. This is the principal labor of religious organizations. The moment they go from this, there is danger. And today, religion, sad to say, is big business. It is now something which is fulfilling the ambitions of people whose ambitions are not religious. They might say, of course, that it's wonderful to be able to build a magnificent palace for God, but it is still better to build deeply humble, gentle people for God. And as the Messiah had no place to lay his head, it is doubtful whether his religion will be fulfilled in monumental structures. It is always that religion is internal, and it is because it is internal that it is eternal. Every generation is born with the seed of religion, just as surely as each generation is born with the seed of propagation. Just as each generation can give birth, so each individual is born with a faith, a spiritual conviction that can give birth to a better life. We all have it, and we should find ways where we can express it. And we should avoid temptations of a religious nature. We should be very aware that true religion does not promise us something unless it is the privilege of hard work. Religion is not an escape from life. It is not a substitute for character. It is not, in any sense of the word, a material edifice. It is simply the eternal truths of life living on generation through generation in the human heart. And it is this heart that is the matchless altar of the human soul. So whatever belief you are in, whatever church you belong to, stay with it if you want to, but grow in it. Outgrow one level of interpretation to another. I know cases in which persons belonging to very orthodox religions have attained great mystical insights. And when they gained these mystical insights, they simply accepted them as part of their own religion. It didn't occur to them that they had transcended anything. It only occurred to them that they had fulfilled something. And in most cases, the fulfillment was based upon character. The individual had lived the life, and therefore his internal development raised him to a new level of symbolism. He then took the same prayer book, he took the same minister's sermons that he had heard before, but suddenly they had new meaning because something had happened inside himself. And he was perhaps able to take a meaning out of simple words that the preacher who spoke them had no understanding of at all. It isn't what you hear, it's what it means to you. And it means to you what you are. So there is really no need of any spiritual conflict on the theological level. There is need for a certain amount of discrimination in a time when we are confronted with religious temptations more seriously than perhaps in the last 500 years. We have to use discrimination, but it is based upon a simple statement of the truth of things. Practically any decision we want to make can be guided by the Sermon on the Mount. The decision can be guided by our inner concept of what truth and faith really are. We are looking always for a way to be more useful. And in various fields of religious activity, we have many groups who devote themselves to missionary work, to field work, who become religious missionaries, medical missionaries, social missionaries, their lives devoted to service. And it is the life of service, not the organization to which they belong, that determines their place in the development of religion. The free thinker, we might say, and I had a lot of experience with free thinkers when I first started out about 60 years ago. Free thinkers are individuals who just jump the traces. They do not want to be bound by any belief. They like to dig and dabble and search. They're always in quest of the right to think as they please. But one little difficulty does arise in this group. They have many points in their favor. They do not believe in intolerant religions. But what they haven't realized is that there is no such a thing as an intolerant religion. When it's intolerant, it's not religion. There is no way in which a religious persecution can be justified. But there are many people who believe that it is a virtue. So the free thinkers are the ones who want to have gather their spiritual nourishment wherever they want to. They're like individuals on a diet. They have decided that the end of health for them is to eat what they please, whether it's good for them or not. So as having the power of free will, they go heavy to starches. And the result is, in their thinking, they simply fulfill the attitudes of their own minds. Now, a free thinker can also be an emancipated person, one who is no longer bound to various beliefs. But as long as he remains a free thinker, he has certain dangers. Because in this world, no one is free. The only freedom there is complete obedience to universal law. There is no one free. We are all servants. We are all servants of a plan. We were created to serve. We were fashioned to release. We are not free. Because freedom would mean that we can separate ourselves from God and do as we please. And this is not possible. But there is a certain freedom that we can have. And that is the freedom to do the best that we know. The freedom to live according to the convictions that we believe are necessary for the common good. All religions have a tendency to run upward gradually like the rungs of a ladder. And the upper end of the ladder is always in the clouds. It is always with its lower part upon the earth and its top among the stars. We are all climbing these different ladders. But these ladders are not physical institutions. These ladders are levels of ourselves. We are moving upward from one level of our own insight to another. The important thing is to keep moving and not become stranded on one of the levels. We must not sit back complacently and say, I now have the religion that makes me completely comfortable. Anything that is completely comfortable is a little dangerous. What we should do when we reach a point where our insight has given us a deeper understanding, we must realize that it is now our privilege to labor with deeper problems. That there are many things that we do not understand, no matter how complacent we may become. So we have to keep on growing. Outgrowing today always. Determined in our consciousness to be better tomorrow than we are now. This is really the whole structure of religion. And from every part of the world, we have the same stories. Every religion has produced its saints and condoned its sinners. Every religion has built temples to God and, as Ingersoll pointed out, all too often, dungeons for men. All these things are part of religions because religions are fashioned by human beings. They are structures built up from below in honor of the power that comes down from above. Now, in the course of building it up from below, what comes down from above sort of gets lost in a good many cases. It is proper to honor our faiths, proper to have them well established in our lives. But we must realize that salvation is not through architecture, unless we wish to consider the Vitruvian canon, that each individual is the architect of his own destiny. We want, in our religious life, to have the privilege of seeking whatever is necessary to fulfill our need today. But we must be very careful to realize that tomorrow is another day. Tomorrow we should need something more. Tomorrow there must be another question to answer. And if we try to answer all the questions of life from one day's religious attitude, we're going to miss most of the growth that we all need. What we have to do is to recognize that the moment we discover a new fact or a new reality or a new truth, it becomes a step upon which we can rise to a higher level. Always we are seeking, and always we will seek, on and on and on, until ultimately in some inconceivable time, that which we have sought will come in its fullness. For what we are seeking is restoration into the divine mystery. We are seeking to be one again with the God power from which we were fashioned. And until we achieve that end, we must keep on striving, keep on growing, and most of all, keep on with the deepest affection and compassion for all living things and all human beliefs. If we can do this, at least in substance or in principle, I think we will find that we do not have to change any particular place of worship. We do not have to look down upon some other church, but rather to be very quiet and realize that what is not necessary for us at the moment is very vital to someone else. I've known people belong to various groups that would be considered pretty disrespectable, and they were wonderful people. They had not discovered that there was anything wrong with their belief. So I've sat down with them and talked about it. And I find that most of these people have interpreted into their present belief the best part of themselves. They believe that they are orthodox. But in the presence of them, the clergy would appear to be rather unenlightened. These people are good because they are good. And they are good because in their hearts they have a belief that transcends the doctrine with which they are associated. They cannot be spoiled. You cannot spoil a good person. But you can spoil anyone who has ulterior motives of any kind. So it's not too much to worry about. It may be that you have relations or friends that are what you regard as members of a less desirable faith than your own. Remember also that somewhere there is someone who's thinking the same thing about you. They only wish you'd wake up while you are trying to wake somebody else up. These notions are not necessary at all, because the final faith, the final proof of the fact that we are in the right place religiously, is that in the place where we are impelled to use our resources as wonderfully, as beautifully, and as graciously as we can. That we find, when in doubt, that the best answer to our problem is in the name of deity to serve those whose need is greater than our own. To serve that where necessary is to be servants in the house. And in this we are all servants. Now, a man I knew very well, who was quite a celebrated doctor, told me one day, he said, "You know, I started out with a very good knowledge of medicine. I did very well in it. But after a number of years, something happened. The sickness of other people came into me. I no longer had patients, as you commonly call them." He says, "I had children. Little suffering children. I could no longer think of them in the form of customers. They were human beings in trouble." So he said, "I closed my office, I went to another town, I opened a little clinic, and the joy of my life has been nearly 30 years in which I have served the sick without pay." So they are not strangers. I wouldn't charge my own brother. I wouldn't charge my mother. Yet these are all children of God together. And he said, "In serving them, I found what I call the doctor's creed." And this is good thinking, very beautiful and basic thinking. We can't all perhaps immediately go out and do unusual things like this, but each person can gradually use his spiritual convictions to correct the mistakes of his mind, emotions, and body. And as he corrects these mistakes one by one, the light of the soul within him will shine through a clearer lantern, and he will be led step by step, gently, wisely, and lovingly, to the fulfillment of the destiny for which he was intended. And all these different paths lead to the same end, but no one can reach that end except by his own effort. And if he has that effort, if he dedicates his life to the pursuit of service and integrities, he will grow and the abilities within him will unfold, and he will discover sometime in the future that the abilities within himself can unfold to such a degree that he totally becomes God. In this realization, we have an ultimate, but along the way, we can take on the labels of deity, we can take on the convictions of deity, the infinite patience of deity, the eternal compassion, the final wisdom, which comes from the fulfillment of the divine plan by which we were fashioned and by which we shall be perfected. With these thoughts in our minds, we can really make some steps forward in religion. Thank you very much.